All right, well, I don't think I need to tell you that the practicum was poor, unfortunately. My prediction came true. I didn't really want it to, but it did, not just as a mean, pretty much globally. So I'm truly talking to the whole class here. I'm not going to beat you while you're down. I only have basically one thing to say about the practicum. And that is that there's certainly, I'm sure that there are many reasons contributing to the poor scores on an individual basis. That could be just about anything. But almost certainly one thing that contributed to it is that most of you try to race through the procedure and get out the door as quickly as possible. And so I'll just say what I told you at the beginning of the semester. We're all adults. I'm not going to demand that you stay here simply because you signed up for this time. It's your money you paid. But now that you've had a practicum behind you, maybe you should rethink trying to get home and eat as soon as possible. Spend some time looking at things more, and it might help you. All right? Yeah.
Some other professors gave their class a study guide. Is there any chance you could give us a study guide for the next practicum?
Yeah. I could, whatever is given to other sections, I can give you, certainly. What else was I going to say? Oh, I guess I was just going to start tonight's stuff. The reason I wanted to keep this on is because I want to actually use a slide while I'm speaking here. We're doing how many chapters tonight? Yeah, and they are animal chapters, so we're done with plants. We're going on to animals. And I don't want to get into the details of what you're actually doing. That's self-explanatory by the manual, but I just want to say some general things about animals and about this slide. What are we looking at in this slide, first of all? This is an example of what? What is this thing called? You could call it by any different names, but what is this overall thing an example of? What kind of tree? Yeah, you could either call it a phylogenetic tree, or you could call it a cladogram, right? They mean the same thing. And so one thing that you see from this is, since this is a cladogram, is that animals, all of which belong to metazoa, is a monophyletic taxon. It is a clade. What does clade mean, though, phylogenetically? What is the definition of a clade? You've been through this in lecture, I assume, right? What does clade actually mean?
Is it like a strand of the species?
Not exactly. It is a group, and a general word for a group of organisms is a taxon, right? There are different levels of taxa. That's what domain, kingdom, phylum, class, and so on is all about. Those are all taxa, the plural of taxon. But a clade is a particular kind of taxon based on relationships of its members. So what a clade is the group of organisms that includes the ancestor that is common to all the members of that group, plus all of its descendants. And that's what we're looking at here. This is the common ancestor of all animals. And this tree includes every descendant of that common ancestor. So the overall group, which is animals or metazoa, is a clade. It's monophyletic. If we didn't include, for instance, the Lophotrochozoa, then it wouldn't be a clade anymore because it wouldn't include all of the ancestors. Or if we didn't include that common ancestor, it wouldn't be a clade anymore either. All right, so animals is not just a casual term like protist is, which is not a clade, right? It's not monophyletic. Animals is, though. At least how we're grouping them now. These, how these things get grouped change continuously as we get more and more evidence. Another thing I want to say about this is it's not the taxa that are on the right, those major groups, those are phyla. This is not an exhaustive list. So there are about 20 other animal phyla that aren't shown here, along with Porifera, Tenophora, and all the ones on the right. These are some good representatives, though. So this is not a complete list. When you think about animals, you can lump them into categories, and these next categories aren't clades either. These are informal ways of grouping things based on certain commonalities. But you can lump them into groups based on different criteria, and one of those criteria is the type of symmetry they exhibit. Well, one of those phyla doesn't even exhibit symmetry. It's asymmetric. The Porifera. What are the Porifera? Sponges. They're called that because they are full of pores. Well, a sponge doesn't have any symmetry. It just kind of randomly grows branches. All these other groups shown here, though, have some sort of symmetry. And there's two major symmetry types exhibited by animals. What are those? What are the types of symmetry? Bilateral is one, and radial. Do you understand the difference between the symmetry types? Radial symmetry is based on a center point, and any line that goes through it is going to strike the same thing on both sides. Like the yin-yang symbol is radially symmetrical. Whereas bilaterally symmetrical is named that because of two sides, bi, two, lateral, side. So we are examples of bilateral organisms, at least superficially. If you cut me open, I'm not going to have two livers. Right? My internal organs are not bilaterally symmetrical, but my exterior is. Well, what are most animals in terms of symmetry? They are, by far, most of them are bilaterally symmetrical. The only ones that aren't, besides Porifera, which aren't even symmetrical at all, the only ones shown here that aren't, that are radially symmetrical, are Tenophora and Nidaria, and just a couple others that aren't listed here. All the ones listed here below Nidaria have bilateral symmetry. And therefore, we collectively call them bilaterians. But that's not really a clade name. That's just based on their symmetry. Another way you can lump certain animals together is based on tissues. Now, a true tissue is a group of cells with a common function separated from other tissues by membranes. And almost all animals have true tissues. But once again, Porifera is an exception. Porifera and just a few others that aren't listed here do not have true tissues. And notice on the cladogram that Porifera, even though it's a member of Metazoa, is not a member of Eumetazoa, which literally means true animals. Sponges are animals, so don't let the name Eumetazoa confuse you. But the reason Eumetazoa get their name, meaning true animals, is because all the members of Eumetazoa have true tissues, whereas sponges do not. All right? If you assume, though, that you're talking about an animal from Eumetazoa, one that does have true tissues, you can also define it based on how many embryonic layers, or germ layers as they're called, these tissues develop from. And so there are two major possibilities. You can have two germ layers or three. And therefore, what two words are defined by those possibilities. What do we call an organism that, or an animal that has two germ layers in its development? Anyone know? I don't know whether you covered this or not. Those are called diploblasts. Di means two. Whereas animals that develop from three germ layers are called triploblasts. Now, if it's a diploblast, what are the names of the two germ layers? So in other words, any organism that has true tissues, any eumetazoan, any animal, I should have said, not organism, any animal from eumetazoa has at least two tissue germ layers, and therefore has at least ectoderm and endoderm. Derm means skin or layer in this sense. Ecto means outside, endo means inside, right? So the diploblasts have only ectoderm and endoderm in their embryonic stage, and all the tissues develop from those two germ layers. The reason that these germ layers form, by the way, in eumetazoans is because eumetazoans, early on in development, when they're just a ball of cells, that ball of cell invaginates. It forms a dent that folds in on itself. That's called gastrulation. And so that forms two different layers. In some other organisms, a third layer is formed as well. Those are the triploblasts. And so triploblasts, in addition to having ectoderm and endoderm, have a layer between the two, which is why it's called mesoderm, meso meaning middle. All right? Another way you can differentiate animals is by what kind or whether they have any internal cavity. And I'm not talking about their digestive tract. I'm talking about a body cavity. What's another name for this body cavity? Starts with a C. Anyone know? Coelom. Coelom is the body cavity that most animals have. Some don't, though, have this. And so we would call those animals acoelomates. A meaning not. The rest of the animals, though, are collectively called coelomates, because they do have a coelom. Now, there are some things that are called pseudocoelomates, or really what I should say is that there are there's three possibilities with respect to this body cavity. You can not have it. You can have a full coelom, a proper coelom. And what makes it a proper coelom is that it's entirely surrounded by mesoderm. Or in the case that's kind of intermediate between those, you can have a body cavity, but it really is not, it's not completely surrounded by mesoderm. It's partially surrounded by mesoderm and partially surrounded by endoderm. And that's a pseudocoelom. It's not a true coelom. But for animals that have these body cavities, or this body cavity, the coelom, it allows for independent movement of organs that are suspended in that coelom. So you're an example of a coelomate. You have cavities in your body that allow movement of organs with respect to other organs without abrading the hell out of each other. For instance, when you breathe, your lungs aren't just scraping on other organs. When your heart beats, it's not scraping on other organisms because you have a body cavity. All right, so that's another way of thinking about animals. And still another one is to classify them either as protostomes or deuterostomes. Now, proto here means first, deutero means second. And stome Stoma means mouth or opening. When the digestive tract forms in an animal, first one opening develops, that's during gastrulation, like I was saying, and then another opening develops at the other end. One of these two openings is going to be the mouth, the other one's going to be the anus. Protostomes are the animals for which that first opening to occur becomes the mouth, and the second one to occur becomes the anus. But deuterostomes have it switched. The first, that indentation, that first opening to form actually eventually becomes the anus, and the second one to form becomes the mouth. So you can think about them that way as well. All right, now so if we just confine ourselves to eumetazoa for a minute, notice that all of the things on this tree within eumetazoa, except for Tenophora and Cnidaria, are in the bilateria clade, which is because all of these ones have bilateral symmetry. Cnidaria and Tenophora do not, but they're still eumetazoans because they have true tissues. Bilateria then, notice, includes three other clades within it. Deuterostomia, Leucotrophozoa, and Ecdysozoa. Now this Ecdysozoa gets named for the fact that these animals undergo ecdysis, which is molting of a either rigid or semi-rigid outer covering, like the arthropods, including the insects. Right? They have an exoskeleton, basically, that they shed periodically or intermittently as they grow. That is called ecdysis, so that's... this just literally means ecdysing animals. Zoa means animals. The Lophotrochozoa get their name because some of its members have structures kind of like funnel-shaped arrangements of tentacles called lophophores. Other members have structures called trochophores, so they just basically blended their names to describe those. And then the deuterostomia is potentially confusing. Obviously, it's named for deuterostomes, right? But don't be misled by that, because even though this deuterostomia clade is named for the fact that its members are deuterostomes, there are also deuterostomes that are outside of deuterostomia. So it doesn't really make sense to use that name, but it has still in use. All right, now which of these are we in? Which of these phyla do we belong to? Which do you think we're closest to in the pictures? If you don't know which phylum we're in. Well, there's not very many that look very human, right? We're members of Chordata. So we're not only eumetazoans, we're not only bilaterians, we're not only in deuterostomia, but we're in Chordata. If you were to look at greater detail and go beyond phylum, so each of these would then branch into smaller taxa, what would Chordata include that includes us? What's a major group within the chordates that includes us and birds and reptiles and amphibians? All of those things have what in common? Compared to an insect, for instance, or a mollusk, a snail. What is it? Well, birds aren't and reptiles aren't. So mammals is even smaller than what I'm saying. What group includes mammals and birds and reptiles, amphibians, fish? Those are the vertebrates. So vertebrata is a group within chordata. And so we're not only chordates, we're vertebrates. But notice, and vertebrata includes all vertebrates. So notice that if you just think about an animal, or if you do, especially someone who hasn't taken a biology class, if you just tell them to name an animal, first of all, chances are they're going to name a mammal more often than not. But even if they don't, if they choose something else, it's likely going to be a vertebrate. And that's simply because we are vertebrates as well. And vertebrates, some vertebrates are pretty big, and so they're the things you see at zoos more often than not. But what I'm trying to get across here is that vertebrates, in terms of the number of species, is a small group. By far, most species of animals are invertebrates, which is everything else on this tree except one little piece of chordata. And that's why tonight you're not even paying attention to vertebrates yet. In this quick survey of animals, in this week and next, you're spending this first week just concentrating on invertebrates, and even then only some invertebrates. So you're going to look at some of these major phyla. I mean, some of these phyla, but not all of them. Like I said, there's about 20 more that aren't even shown on this slide. And you're not even looking at all of these tonight. But that's where we are. I mean, that's kind of the roadmap to the how you should be thinking about these animals for this in the next couple of weeks. All right, I'll let you go so you have some time to look at everything.